Support for State Week comes from the following sponsors: the Illinois Education Association, Visit Springfield, and PyOrg.
From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
We're just days away from the primary election. We'll be talking about some key races coming up, especially for U.S. Senate, governor, and more. That's ahead on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Professor Emeritus and former Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. And Charlie's also been a longtime reporter and observer. Our guest this week, good to have him back on the show, Patrick Fingston, radio host for WMAY in Springfield. And he's also the author of the Illinois Political Newsletter. Thanks for being here with us, Patrick.
Gentlemen, thank you for letting me come down the street and join your public radio party.
Well, all right. Let's get this party started, I guess. I want to start with the U.S. Senate because a lot of interest in this. I can't watch TV right now or even look at the internet and not see ads popping up for candidates, especially on the Democratic side. We have primaries on both the Democratic and Republican sides, but let's start with the Democrats. We're seeing a lot of money flowing in, getting kind of nasty there with the attack ads. Three candidates are viewed as the front runners for the Democrats: the Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton, Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy, and the Congresswoman Robin Kelly. So, Patrick, how are you viewing this race as we're just days away from Election Day?
Well, so conventional wisdom in this race for months has been that Raja Krishnamoorthy was in the catbird seat, right? That he was on TV back in July, was uncontested on the airwaves until essentially the first of the year. And then after January 1st, that's when Stratton started spending a little money. The governor and his dark money funded super PAC came in and started spending money for Stratton. And it's gotten divisive. It's gotten mean. It's gotten a little inside baseball. If you look at the ads and who's funding who and, you know, who's cheating who and who don't even care anymore. And it's gotten way down the rabbit hole for the political insiders. And you have to wonder, normal people watching those ads and just go, who cares? Right? It's expensive to buy groceries and gasoline is going to go through the roof. I don't care about who's funding who. Who's going to make prices go down? And it feels sometimes that the campaigns get down this hole and they miss the point. They miss the narrative. And it feels like we've completely done that in this race. I think it is certainly closer than it was a month ago, 2 months ago. The Stratton people are trying to push the narrative that she's winning. The Democratic Lieutenant Governors Association, which is supporting Stratton, has put out a couple of polls that show her winning. They won't give us the crosstabs, so I take no polls that you don't give me the crosstabs for with any credibility. There was a recent one for Krishnamoorthy that had him up. They wouldn't give us the crosstabs on that either, so I discount it. So take what you want on polls, but that's where I stand on them. Bottom line is, all indications are this is going to be a very close race, and it could be a very late night on Tuesday.
Now, Charlie, it's not surprising to see this type of fight for this seat and the competitiveness here because of the fact that these seats don't really open up like this very often. This is Dick Durbin's seat. He's announced he's going to retire at the end of his term. And, you know, the person that wins this, especially here in Illinois, a Democrat, possibility they could be in that seat for 20 years or longer. It's the Senate, remember. People stay sometimes till they die. So these are folks who aren't that old. They could stay there a very long time. So that's why people are so fighting so hard to try to get this seat.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. And in my mind, one of the reasons for the negativity of the ads is that these three major candidates, don't really differ that much on the issues. They're all against the war. They all want to reform ICE or abolish ICE. They're all anti-Trump. And so on public policy, you really have to work to find these small slivers of difference. One of the things I find interesting is whether or not the idea that Krishnamurthy, who some of his backers are also supporting Kelly, if all is said and done, that will have the impact of splitting the black vote. And so you wind up with Krishnamurthy being elected, Stratton narrowly missing, Kelly coming in third. And I wonder what kind of repercussions there'll be within the black political community saying that we're losing this chance to get a seat for our folks because of the underhanded tactics, if you will, of some of Krishnamurthy's backers also putting money into Kelly's race to draw off votes from that black voters that otherwise would be voting for Juliana Stratton.
The people who are complaining about that, one, I don't think that that Indian PAC is spending enough money to make enough of a difference. But two, the people complaining about that are the same people who didn't say a darn word when J.B. Pritzker spent $35 million to beat the African-American Republican candidate in a Republican primary for governor 4 years ago. So don't cherry pick your complaints. So spare me the outrage.
I remember that happening, and that was the same. That was Charlie was talking. I was thinking the exact same thing about that. When you mentioned that they're not really that different, I think you can actually see most of the ads I've watched from these candidates have focused on who's going to stand up to Donald Trump. But is that the winning message right now?
That's the only message right now, right? And I do think there are differences, right? Kelly is a progressive who knows how Washington works. Stratton is a super progressive who sometimes is spouted, you know, policy positions that are at a difference with reality. Krishnamurthy is actually relatively centrist for today's Democratic Party. He just doesn't want anyone to hear that in a primary, because if they hear middle, if they hear compromise, if they hear governing, that's a death knell in a primary. So he's trying to paint himself as more progressive than maybe he would actually govern. And it's made him look a little silly a few times, because he's hedged on some things. He's opened doors to things, because that's what someone in Congress who's been willing to work with people and get things done does, is tries to make a deal. But there's no room for that in the primary. So I wonder if people who are paying attention to this notice that hedging from him, and whether he gets penalized for it.
Yeah, and Charlie, that's the problem, I think, with politics today, is you have to run so much to one side or the other in these primaries. It attracts certain candidates that aren't going to be always the best at compromise, working with the other side in a time maybe when that's what you really need. You need people to try to come together and find consensus, but we're not seeing that from either party, right?
No, and I think part of it goes back to the way legislative districts are drawn. Whoever gets to draw the district tries to slant it as much as possible towards their party. And in Illinois, we have districts that are gerrymandered to favor Democrats. In the Republican primaries, a charitable way to put it? The folks, when I came of age as a reporter, the Ogilvies, the Edgars, the Thompsons, even George Ryan, those people aren't part of the Republican Party anymore. And so you have the people who are further out. As I say, when I was a reporter, people who I would consider to be fringe are now like the mainstream for Republicans. And so in the primary, you have to be farther right, or just like in the Democratic primary, Democrats are slewing the other way towards the left. And you have to be the most progressive, the most left-wing. In my personal opinion, I think this is all bad, basically for governance, because you don't want the extremes. You want people more from the center who are willing to sit down with the guy across the aisle and work out solutions. You know, ages ago, that was pretty common in Illinois. I don't see that anymore.
Well, we'll talk more about the U.S. Senate race in just a moment.
Support for State Week comes from the members of the Illinois Education Association, serving 135,000 members of educators and support professionals around Illinois. IEA's mission is to promote excellence and equity in public education. When schools and communities unite, we all win. Resources and membership information at iea.org. NEA.org.
Patrick Fingston is with us here on State Week. Patrick, U.S. Senate race, we talked about the Democrats there for a bit. What about on the Republican side? There's also several candidates running, trying to get that nomination. Maybe the best known is Don Tracy. He ran once before for lieutenant governor, and he also was the Republican Party chair in the state for a period of time. He's an attorney from Springfield. Don Tracy, a lot of people thought this is probably his race to lose, but he could lose it, I think.
I think you're absolutely right. The Tracy played this primary very conservatively, trying to hold on to his money for the general election so that he could make a splash there. In the meantime, though, a Chicago attorney named Jeannie Evans has tried to outflank Tracy from the right, has spent a bunch of money, tried to up her name ID. And has, you know, I think I've gotten four or five mailers from her, and maybe a two, maybe three from Don, who had to respond in kind because of that. Depending on who you talk to, they both campaigns think they're winning. I was, to be honest here, pretty unimpressed in the interview I did with Evans on my radio show the other day. You know, Don would want a very respectable race. You know, I know Don, I like Don, just to be clear on that. But you know, he neither will be a favorite to win. And if, you know, if he somehow loses this race because he didn't come out and do the job early on, it's going to be a pretty embarrassing loss.
So Republicans are also going to face a problem with voter turnout. Democrats will as well. But Donald Trump is not on the ballot here. And that's really what has energized Republicans in the last few elections. So with these midterm elections, or in this case, races for things like U.S. Senate or governor, they're not going to have that to bring everybody to the polls. Turnout is expected to be low, Patrick?
Historically in Illinois, Sean and Charlie, you guys know this, in off-year elections, midterm elections, gubernatorial elections, this is the year that Republicans would have generally had better turnout than Democrats. In the era of Trump, that has flipped, that Republicans have better turnout in presidential years, not better than Democrats, but better than they do compared to themselves in those gubernatorial years, those mid-year elections. So if you go back, just look through the history book here, Jim Edgar's 1994 re-election campaign, the primary, he had nominal opposition from the right, Jack Roser running against him. There were about 695,000 votes cast statewide in that primary. I would venture to guess that you see a number at under 600,000 potentially, maybe even worse, especially if there's a winter storm projected in Chicago over the weekend and into the early part of the week. You could see Republican turnout just plummet, and it could be lower than we've seen in decades in the state.
Yeah, Charlie, turnout plays a key role, especially when you don't have a ton of name ID in these races. And this U.S. Senate primary for the Republicans is right there for that. You don't know who's going to come out and support you. Is it going to be that traditional Republican base, or is it going to be someone else that decides they want to, back one candidate, and if enough of them come out, we could see an upset?
Yeah, and that's something you really can't tell. And in my mind, an important factor is what kind of a ground game do you have? Do you have campaign workers who are going to be able to go around on election day to people that you've identified as potential supporters, remind them to vote, maybe even drive them to the polls? Another thing that is going to be interesting this time around, I think, is the early voting. I've seen it reported that the number of ballots already cast, I don't know if it was State Board of Elections that reported, I saw it somewhere, that there are maybe three or four times as many ballots already cast as there were the last midterm election.
As of Thursday, statewide, 275,000 mail-in ballots have been returned. Another 212,000 early votes have been cast so far. So that's as of Thursday.
Yeah. Well, in my case, I do the mail-in thing, and I drop my ballot off at the side of the county building Saturday night. bright and early Monday morning, I got an email from the county clerk saying, we've received your ballot. And if you didn't send one or you didn't drop one off, call us right away.
Well, Republicans for years now have really gone against mail-in voting and even early voting in some cases. Always the thought that Republicans turn out more on Election Day. Democrats have been trending more toward getting their ballots in before then. Is that changing, Patrick? Are we seeing Republicans starting to adopt the idea that, hey, just get your vote in, it doesn't matter when?
Well, it's the permanent vote by mail that has changed things initially here. That's why that mail-in number is so much higher than it has been in recent years, because you have so many people in the state that have just checked, mail me my ballot automatically every time. I'm going to vote in a Democratic primary every time. I'm going to vote in a Republican primary every time. Just mail me my ballot and I'll do it when I'm ready, right? There are lots of people who've taken advantage of that in the state. The problem with Republicans in early voting or mail-in voting is, while the state party and local officials continue to try to push them to get their vote in early, the push from the top, right? Donald Trump continues to want to ban mail-in voting, continues to cast doubt on election equipment and early voting and claiming the 2020 election was rigged, even though there's no proof that anything was rigged in 2020. And it continues to sow doubt among his supporters, which are the base of Republican primary voters. And so, yeah, you continue to have pushback among Republicans who are like, hey, we got to get our voters in. So let's get them a ballot. Let's get them to vote early. Let's get them to get a mail-in ballot. But they continue to get this push from the top, where Donald Trump says, don't vote by mail because it's corrupt, you know, and there's, it's just BS.
No, Charlie, that's, to me, that's been a failed strategy.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think this is all practical. Now, maybe in the universe in which Donald Trump lives, it's a good idea. But I think for practical reasons, you want to get your people voting within the window of opportunity as soon as possible. And for example, you know, you mentioned, Patrick, that the weather forecast for next week is not going to be good. And so if you're somebody who says, I'll only vote on Election Day, and suddenly here's this terrible storm, you say, oh, man, I don't want to go out in this kind of weather, and you don't vote. Whereas somebody like me, who's one of the people who signed up to get mail ballots, I was able to drop mine off on a relatively pleasant Saturday afternoon. It's really a missed opportunity for Republicans. And I think, as you guys indicated, the people closest to the electorate, the local officials and local party leaders in Illinois and other states, don't really, they don't want to get crosswise with the president. But on the other hand, they're thinking, we want to get our voters to the polls as early as we can and get them to vote by mail or get them to vote in person, early voting.
All right, we'll be talking about the governor's race in just a moment.
Support for State Week comes from Visit Springfield, featuring dozens of attractions and overnights on Route 66 in the capital city. Springfield is home to numerous Lincoln sites, Frank Lloyd Wright's Dana Thomas House, the Illinois State Capitol, and more. The Visit Springfield team can help organizers plan their event in the capital city. Attractions and tourism information at visitspringfieldillinois.com.
Back on State Week, Patrick, the race for governor. We know J.B. Pritzker is going to be the Democratic nominee trying for a third term as governor. But on the Republican side, who's going to be the person who challenges him? Will it be Darren Bailey, who has been the nominee last time unsuccessfully? Or will it be one of the others who are running to try to fill that slot? What are you seeing right now with this race?
It's going to be Darren Bailey, and it's not going to be close. Let's just be clear about that, right? Every poll that I've seen, every poll that I've heard of, all of the internal polls that I'm hearing are showing Bailey up big. Bailey's own polling has him close to 60% in the primary. I don't know that it'll be that good for him, of course, but he's going to win. It's not going to be close. My guess is the AP is calling that race shortly after 7 o'clock on Tuesday night. And then we get a rehash of 2022, and Pritzker will start attacking on Wednesday, and Bailey has no money, and this race could be over by Memorial Day. So we'll have a sleepy summer and fall.
Could Donald
Trump? I just saved you all a bunch of times.
Could Donald Trump play some role here in this race, though? Could he, endorse Bailey, get involved in some case, and maybe help things out? Or do you think that would even matter?
I don't know. Well, so Bailey has said that he did not seek out Trump's endorsement this time. I think he knows, and we have seen this sort of kinder, gentler Darren Bailey for whether it's humility from the whooping that he took in 2022, or if it's from the personal tragedy that he and his family felt last year with the death of his son and daughter-in-law and two of their grandkids in a helicopter crash, which he admits has changed him and his outlook on the world. Whatever the reason is, he sounds different. He's talking differently to people and about people. On policy, though, there's not a lot of difference in the old Darren Bailey and the new Darren Bailey. Maybe he's made some smart political moves when he came out against a bill that would essentially criminalize abortion in Illinois. And it was sponsored by a state legislator from the Quad Cities area who is also also put in a bill to reinstitute the death penalty. So, the TV ads write themselves that the Republicans want to, send you to death row for having an abortion. So Bailey at least saw the political problems with that package of bills. So give him credit for growth there. But no, I don't think Trump is playing in this race. Rick Heidner has desperately thrown himself on the front steps of Mar-a-Lago trying to get Trump's endorsement, going on Newsmax, calling himself a Trump Republican in all of his mailings. He has apparently hosted Don Jr. for a fundraiser before, but I don't think Trump's playing in a race that the Republicans have such a long shot at winning.
Yeah, and Charlie, that seems to be the idea that most people have, is that Pritzker could coast to another term here. Even though he's got some baggage and some things that people don't like about the state of Illinois, taxes being one of those, and he's facing some tough budget decisions coming up, but a rematch when it wasn't that close last time probably doesn't bode well for Republicans.
No, I don't think so. As a matter of fact, 4 years ago, in the last, when Pritzker ran against Bailey, he got 55% of the vote. He beat Bailey by more than 500,000 votes. And so Bailey is not going to have the big money behind him that he did last time. And I don't see that JB has any real worries. And I think I agree with Patrick that we can probably call it by Memorial Day.
Just a couple of minutes left here, and Patrick, I'll let you weigh in on this. There is also a race for another statewide office, and that is the race for comptroller. There's a big primary there with four different people running. J.B. Pritzker's playing a role in that race also, but how do you see that working out?
Well, I think the polling that I've heard shows it kind of a three-way race between Representative Margaret Croak, who's J.B. Pritzker's preferred candidate in that race. She used to work on his campaign and in the administration before she went to the House. The other candidates in the mix are Senator Corina Villa, who's taken the very progressive lane in that race. And then Susana Mendoza, the incumbent's choice, is Lake County Treasurer Holly Kim. And Mendoza did some pushing back this week on Pritzker's spending and endorsement of Croak, essentially saying that this job has to be independent, and it's improper for J.B. Pritzker to try to install one of his people who she believes could never be independent of Pritzker into that job, because you need to have someone, as she puts it, with a spine of steel. And I think there's a sign that, there might be some Democratic grumbling out there over Pritzker's playing in some of these primaries with the money he spent trying to get Juliana Stratton over the line, and certainly the money he's spending on Margaret Croak. But when you win, it's hard to it's hard to say it didn't work.
All right. Well, let's go down to our notes from the field. Patrick, I'll stay with you this week.
Well, this election is a case of redemption in some cases. Melissa Bean was swept out of her Northwest suburban congressional district in the Tea Party wave of 2010. Now, Bean, who's long known as a moderate and former Blue Dog Democrat, is attempting to recapture her seat 16 years later. I spoke to her this week, and she's running as the grown-up in the room, as in a crowded race to replace Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy, who's running for Senate. She's being boosted by millions of dollars in spending by the America-Israel Public Affairs Committee, AIPAC, and she's been dinged by the super progressives in the race for her connection to that group. The other is Jesse Jackson Jr. He resigned his seat on the south side of Chicago and the Southland in 2012 after he was being investigated for campaign improprieties. He later spent 17 months in federal prison for mail and wire fraud after he misspent $750,000 personally of campaign funds. He's seeking a return to the House in the 2nd District this spring, a little grayer with some thicker glasses, a new perspective on life, and a felony conviction to go with it. I spoke to Jackson Thursday night, and he says he's been transparent with every voter that he's spoken to about his past, and he promises that those mistakes will never happen again. But he's human, he says. There will probably be new mistakes along the way.
All right, man. Charlie.
Well, the Commission on Government and Forecasting Accountability, which, as I've said in the past, is the legislature's fiscal gurus, came out with a report, the update budget report, and they compared their forecast for FY27 with the forecast that came out last week by the governor's office, or last month, by the governor's office of management and budget. What they point out is that the governor's budget folks estimated that we'd have roughly $55.5 billion in FY27 in our general funds. Now, the commission's forecast is significantly lower than that, but the commission points out that the GOMBI's projection incorporate roughly $728 million in new net revenue that would require statutory changes, which is a fancy way of saying tax increases. And when you take those numbers out of the figure, in fact, the estimate that GOMBI has under current law would fall below the commission's projection. The commission's forecast would be roughly $200 million higher on a comparable basis. But still, it's something that lawmakers will take into account as they work to try and craft a budget for the coming fiscal year. And again, this is going to be a year when there's all kinds of uncertainties.
That's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler and Patrick Fingston with WMAY Radio and author of the Illinois Political Newsletter. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.
Support for State Week comes from PiOrg, a nonprofit consulting firm providing resources for strategic planning, best practice implementation, and outcomes-focused program evaluation across the country, helping organizations make data understandable and actionable, enabling changemakers to strengthen critical skills and serve others more effectively. PI, Plan, Implement, Evaluate. Services and information at PIORG.org.